to start with, it's my pleasure to have John Kramer today as our presenter. I'm excited to introduce John Kramer because John is just an icon in the writing and publishing world. I've known John for years. He's brilliant on all matters concerning books. I can tell you his book, 1001 Ways to Market Your Book, is absolutely fantastic. Anyone that's a writer should have his book, or if you want to be a writer, that goes into effective marketing, how to make a bestseller, designing your book, promotion, book reviews, advertising, distribution, dealing with bookstores, and a lot more. John's going to talk today on how to create a bestseller without breaking a sweat. He's going to discuss the things that an author or publisher needs to do to get his or her book on the New York Times bestseller list and how to sell hundreds of thousands of copies. Most of John Kramer's recommendations to achieve bestsellerdom take more sweat equity than big promotional dollars. John today is going to present a roadmap of the basic principles a publisher needs to follow in order to create a bestseller. He's going to talk about the top 10 do's and don'ts of bestseller publishing, the things he feels important and knows from his own experience with independent publishers, those things that really work. These are principles that can be put to work immediately by new publishers getting ready to launch. John is the owner of Open Horizons as well as the editor of Book Marketing Update Newsletter. He's the author of the Complete Direct Marketing Sourcebook, High Impact Marketing on a Low Impact Budget, author of the Do-It-Yourself Publicity Kit, and Celebrate Today, and of course, 1001 Ways to Market Your Book. As a consultant, his clients include a self-published author who sold over 1 million books, a new age publisher with 60 titles, and John, is that $100 million publisher?
Uh-huh.
$100 million. Let's have to look at that again. With a rapidly growing list of 1,000 titles. So, John, we're all anxious to hear what you have to say, so let's get started.
Well, I think my hour's already been taken. I think I'm probably the only person from a very small town. Fairfield, Iowa, has only got 10,000 people. But because it only has 10,000, we can claim and be right to say that we have more New York Times best-selling authors per capita than anywhere else in the country. New York can't even claim that. Of course, they have a lot of population. But we have, I don't know, 5 or 6 co-authors of Chicken Soup for the Soul books, as well as one author who has an architectural book that was a New York Times bestseller, and a number of other books like that. So we also probably have more book publishers per capita than anywhere else in the country, except for maybe Dent, Minnesota, or something like that. Anyway, what I would like to do is talk about how to create a bestseller without doing it the way that the New York publishers do it, because the way they do it is crazy and expensive and only works if you have incredible distribution, which some New York publishers have and which most small publishers don't start off with and most beginning authors don't start off with. So you could do it the New York Times way, you know, the New York way, New York publisher way, where they throw $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 at a book, get lots of copies out there, and, you know, maybe buy some ads and try to get some publicity and hope it works. But even the New York publishers only succeed in 1 out of 4 books that they publish in that way. And most of the books they publish, they don't publish that way. They actually expect to lose money on 3 out of 4 books they publish. They plan that. It's all budgeted in. They probably only push maybe 1 out of 50 books they publish to try to make them into a bestseller. And even those, they only get 1 out of 4 that they actually make successful as a bestseller. So you can see how it doesn't make much sense for us to try to follow their plan. So the way that I recommend doing it, and this is based on a lot of people who have self-published, a lot of smaller publishers, and a few New York Times published authors. One of the first ways is to start locally and let it build. Rather than try to blast off your book all over the country, one of the strategies you can use that has worked very well for a number of people is to start locally and let the book build from there. For example, The 1 Minute Manager was originally self-published and became a San Diego success, sold over 30,000 copies in a couple of months, And they originally self-published it because they wanted to prove the market for the book before they sold the rights to a New York publisher. When they did sell it to a New York publisher, it did become a national bestseller. But they started by proving it in their own local market before they sold the rights. And the primary reason they wanted to do that is they wanted the book to be a hardcover book selling for $16, which at that time was a very high price for a short, small hardcover book, and the New York publishers weren't going to do that. But by proving their success in San Diego, they were able to get a New York publisher to do it that way, and the book became a national bestseller and spawned a whole bunch of other books in the same series. There's another example of a local example in Iowa, Joanna Lund, who's was an Iowa housewife and a secretary in a real estate office, had never spoken publicly or anything like that. But she decided that when her son went to war, this was the Desert Storm War, she decided that she would lose weight because she was very hefty, and she wanted to be alive when her boy came home. So she lost 120 pounds using her recipe, and then sold copies, sold over 30,000 copies of her book in Iowa before she was picked up by Penguin, and went on to become the best-selling author on QVC. Has now sold millions of copies of books. But she started just locally. She just became the talk of Iowa, which isn't too hard to do, because Iowa is desperate for news, I guess. But her 30,000 copies she sold in Iowa is more than any bestseller ever sells in Iowa. Clinton hasn't sold that many copies. Certainly the only other book that maybe has come close to that would be the Bible. And certainly in Iowa, it has sold more than 30,000 copies. Another example of starting locally and letting it build was a book called The Messengers, which was published in Seattle and the Portland area. The guy spent over $100,000 promoting it. He got billboards. He bought full-page newspaper ads in the local papers, and over about a three-month period during the holiday season one year, he sold about 15,000 copies. Now, that isn't enough to pay back the $100,000, but he went on to sell the rights to a New York publisher for $1 million. So it paid off for him, and, you know, surprisingly, I haven't heard of the book since then, so I don't know if the publisher ever published it. I don't think it ever became a national bestseller, but certainly the guy made money on it, and I'm surprised that it didn't take off, because I would have guessed that he was going to spend more money on it, but I have not heard of the book since then. It was a book about angels. Okay, it's a little hard talking when I don't get feedback, so it's kind of interesting to do that. Normally you have an audience in front of you, and you get their feedback and so on. So if I get a little hesitant here once in a while, it's just because I'm not getting feedback. Point number two is a second way to roll out a bestseller is to do it city by city. So take your time and maybe spend a month in each city and roll it out. I'll give you a couple examples how that was done. There was a small publisher in Duluth, Minnesota, Pfeiffer Hamilton, that published a book called Old Turtle. What they did for their strategy is they started by hiring a publicist who spent the time every month organized a one-week publicity campaign in a particular city. She would book them for like St. Louis, Chicago, Cincinnati, and so on. And what they would do is they'd inundate the city during that one week, when the author would be on radio, newspapers, in bookstores, doing school events, and speaking other places, and really inundating the city. The guy drove a Volkswagen bus dressed up as an old turtle, so that when he came to appear, he had a nice, you know, visual appeal there. And the book began to sell, and within about a year, it was voted by the booksellers as their favorite book to hand sell. And as a result of that, it actually hit the bestseller list and sold several million copies. So they did it city by city, and they paid a publicist, you know, probably about $3,000 a month to organize that campaign. And once it became a bookseller favorite hand seller, it then went on to become a bestseller. A second example is James Redfield's The Celestine Prophecy. He went city to city in a Volkswagen bus promoting the book, speaking wherever he could, and within about a year's time, he sold something like 80,000 copies out of the back of his car, his van, and went on to sell it to a New York Times publisher, a New York publisher, who made it a bestseller. But he obviously proved the market and already had the word of mouth going before the New York publisher even began to publish the book. He could have probably created a bestseller on his own if he had wanted to, but it would have taken more work. A third way that you can create a bestseller is to just take your time. Build it slowly. Don't worry about, you know, the whole idea that you only got 6 weeks to publish a book, you know, and market it and make it a bestseller is true for New York publishers, but it's not true for self-publishers or for small publishers, because we don't take a book off the market and we don't stop promotion after 6 weeks. That's something the New York publishers do. But the reality is that for us, most of our books are going to stay in a store for at least half a year or a year before they return it. And so we don't have to worry about that 6 week window. We can take time to publish a book. One of the primary examples of that is a book self-published called When I Grow Old, I Shall Wear Purple. The author, it's a collection of short stories by unknown authors, short stories and poems by unknown authors. The woman was told over and over again not to publish the book because nobody buys collections of short stories, certainly not from somebody who's not known. But what she knew is she knew her market. Her market were women the same age as she, which is about 50. And it turns out that that actually is the exact demographics of the primary buyers for books anyway. Women aged 35 to 55 are the primary buyers of books. Probably somewhere around 50 to 60% of all books bought are bought by women in that age group. But the author, she really believed in the book, and she took time promoting it and just promoted it to her target audience and so on. About 2 years, 2 or 3 years after she published it, her book again was one of the books that was voted by the booksellers, American Booksellers Association, as one of their favorite books to hand sell. And it then, as a result of that vote, got picked up by the chains, went on to become a New York Times bestseller, went on to sell 4 million copies. A second example of that is a book by a speaker that many of you probably know, Greg Godek, who's the author of 1001 Ways to Be Romantic. He sold 1 million copies on his own, then sold the rights to Sourcebooks, which who have gone on to sell another 1 million copies in the last 5 years. He had a whole promotional strategy. He spent about $25,000 every quarter to promote his book. He figured that he would spend $1 a book to promote the book. He sold about 100,000 copies a year, actually more than that in most years, but he would spend $25,000 to promote the book, and he had different strategies for doing it. And but mostly he did it through publicity, TV appearances, and so on. It took him, I think, something like 5 years before he finally got on Oprah, who loved the book. If there's one key market for your book, you should work on it. Send them something every day. People become aware from repeated exposure to you. And in most cases, that will start to build your success, create the word of mouth that will then build the book into something more. Because the key thing that sells books is word of mouth. 80% of all books are sold by word of mouth. That means that somebody tells somebody else, you got to get this book. Almost any bestseller becomes a bestseller because people are out there saying, you got to read this book, you got to read this book, or you see it in people's hands everywhere and you know you have to read the book so you can talk intelligently with your friends or coworkers about the hot book of the year. That's why everybody had to go out and buy Clinton's book when it became published. That's why everybody buys Da Vinci Code. They want to be able to talk to other people about the book. A fourth way to create a bestseller is to get out there and speak. Now, this is something most of you know, but almost every new age or self-help book many religious titles became bestsellers because the author went out to speak. The Chicken Soup for the Soul series was that way. Conversations with God, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, so on and so forth, all became bestsellers because the author went out and did the Unity Church Circuit and the Learning Annex Circuit and the other places where they could speak. There was just that new book out, oh boy, I'm going blank on it now, by Rick Warren, on church, that became a bestseller. It sold 15 million copies. He did it by getting the pastors of different churches to be involved in the book and recommend it. I think it was called The Purpose Driven Life. And there was a second book called The Purpose Driven Church. And those books, again, because he went out to speak at churches, became a bestseller and went on to become a backbone for many churches' revival sessions. And everybody in the church had to buy the book. Now, that's a great thing. And again, the other opportunity, of course, with churches, I mean, with speaking, is not just that you create word of mouth, but you also, of course, can sell books in the back of the room. Now, if you're published by a larger publisher, they're normally going to offer you books at 40% discount. But I suggest that when you negotiate the contract, you negotiate a higher percentage, somewhere around 60 to 70 or even 80%. They can afford to give it to you if you make them a good argument. Every element of any contract you sign with a publisher is negotiable. It's just how badly do they want your book? How badly do they want you promoting the book? The other thing about speaking is that the moment you speak in front of somebody and they've heard you speak, especially live, they sort of promote themselves in your word-of-mouth army. They become like sergeants rather than privates in your word-of-mouth army. Because the minute they've met you and if they like you, and presumably that would always be the case, they are going to help promote your book because just the fact that they've met you makes them more excited to talk about your book. And they will become a stronger member of your word-of-mouth army. I think you should always encourage people to promote themselves in your army. If you don't like the army analogy, you can always call it a circus parade, a fan club, a party, whatever you want. I like the army analogy simply because of the ability to promote people. And it's always good to have some generals in your army, like I do, like Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen and Robert Allen, who are generals in my army. They've made me an ambassador in their army. They have a different kind of army. Point number five is the packaging and branding of your book is really important if you want to make a bestseller. It really makes it different. There's some books that you can pick up and it's hard to let go. You just have to hold on to the book. I did that once with a book that was being brought out by a small publisher out of Berkeley, Wildcat Canyon Press. It was a book called Girlfriends. The publisher showed it to me about 3 months before they published the book, and she said, "We hope to sell 60,000 copies of the book." But I just held the book in my hand, and it felt so good. I didn't even have to open the book, and I knew I wanted to buy it. It just had a great design and a great feeling to it. And I told her you're going to sell 200,000 copies in your first year, just based on knowing that she was a good marketer. And because the cover and the book felt right, they actually ended up selling 300,000 copies. The book is called Girlfriends. It was designed for women to give to other women to say, "You're my special friend." It went on to be hit the New York Times bestseller list and sold over 600,000 copies in about 15 months' time. It went on to actually spawn a number of other books in the series. But other books that have had great titles, designs, or interior design are things like the Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I asked people to tell me what was John Gray's second book after Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and nobody can tell me. The book was something like What Your Father Didn't Know and Your Mother Couldn't Tell You, or something like that. I don't really know. it didn't sell nearly as well as his Mars and Venus book. So then he went back to his brand, which was Mars and Venus, and did Mars and Venus in the boardroom, Mars and Venus in the bedroom, and so on and so forth. Because that was his brand. That's what, that was memorable. Another book like that that became a very good brand is the Worst Case Scenario Handbook. Another one is the Dummy series, which has sold over 100 million copies. And here's a case where I want to alert you as speakers to be aware that you want to control the trademark and write to any book that you think is brandable. Because the Dummy series was created, the look and feel of the Dummy series, the title, and everything was created by Dan Gookin, the author of the first book, PC for Dummies, or was Dodge for Dummies. I think it was Dodge for Dummies. And the publisher is the one who took control of the trademark and didn't give him any right in the other books in the series. And he should have had the right because he created the look and feel, he created the trademark. By the time I talked to him and said, hey, you have to go back and negotiate that, it had been 5 or 6 years, and his lawyer told him it was too late. He had given them, you know, he hadn't contested it soon enough. Now, Jack and Mark, with Chicken Soup for the Soul, contested it quickly enough that they got the right to the Chicken Soup for the Soul trademark. But still, they were locked up with that particular publisher for the rest of the series. So you got to learn to negotiate your contracts with publishers so you control the look and, you know, well, the look and feel of the book you're not usually going to be able to control. But the title, the trademark, that you can control. There was an interesting one other book that I think, because of its title, which is an unusual title, became a bestseller. And that is, What Color is Your Parachute? By Richard Bowles. He's told me that. He says, I don't know why the book sells. I'm not a good marketer. I don't know anything about it. You know, he says, I don't know why the book sold, but I think the reason it sold is because it was the only book in the career section that actually looked like it was fun. And when people went into a bookstore and said, I want that coloring book, or that balloon book, or that flying book, or that parachute book about careers, the bookseller always knew which book they wanted. Whereas if you go into a bookstore and ask for the career manual, and the bookseller doesn't have it, but has the career guidebook or the career handbook, they will sell you that book. And they'll say, oh, you must be mistaken. You probably meant the career guidebook or the career handbook. They do this because they don't want to lose the sale. But if you come going in asking for the coloring book, they can't tell you the career handbook because the title doesn't match. And I think that one reason that What Color is Your Parachute worked is because the title was so unique. Now, it did require some promotion to create the brand and create people going in to ask for it. So I'm sure that Richard forgets how much work he probably did in the beginning, and 10-Speed did. 10-Speed Press did in helping to create a bestseller. That was originally self-published as a little book for ministers who were looking for second careers. In fact, there's an interesting sidelight to that story, is that the book had become so big, it had become like 550 or 600 pages big, and Nelson, Richard, actually cut the book by about 200 pages because the book was too big. And for his market, it was too big, it was too intimidating. So he took 200 pages out of the current edition and put it all up on his website. He said, you can go and look for this other information on my website, but I want to keep the book useful and approachable by people who are looking for a job and don't have time to read a 600-page book. Point number 6 is timing is important. The timing of the book can make the difference between whether or not your book is a bestseller or is simply one of the Me Too books. For example, the Beanie Baby Handbook was self-published. It became a bestseller. They sold something like 3 or 4 million copies. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for over a year and a half. It was self-published. A lot of the bigger publishers, you know, did Me Too books. None of them ever hit the bestseller list. If they did, it was for like 1 week. But the Beanie Baby Handbook, because it was self-published, every time they had to go back to press, they actually published a new edition. So the book was always up to date with all the new Beanie Babies and all the stories about them and all the value of them by people who were enthusiasts rather than a New York publisher who takes too long to turn around a new edition and couldn't handle the turnaround time. So they had a bestseller for a year and a half, because they were able to turn it around and always keep the book new and fresh. And it was also the first book by people who are really in the market in an active way. A lot of books have new markets for books are first published by smaller publishers or self-publishers. For a long time, New York publishers thought that the only place people wanted to travel was Europe. And so almost all travel books were about Germany, Italy, Spain, France, and so on. And nothing about, Indonesia, Philippines, things like that. So when, the founder of, Moon Publications, did his first book in the Indonesian handbook, I think it was. He self-published it, and that was his first book that he published. Bill Dalton was his name. He created a whole new market, and Moon Handbooks, Lonely Planet, and a number of other small publishers were the ones that said, hey, there's a whole world out here, and there are people who are interested, and they sell more copies of their books for the whole Pacific Rim, South America, Eastern European countries, and so on, than many of the New York publishers, because they got into the market only after the smaller publishers proved that there was a market. The whole New Age market was built from small publishers and self-publishers creating the marketplace before bigger publishers decided to create imprints for New Age books and so on. In fact, still many of the New Age books are published by smaller publishers, such as the... there was a book by Ames Allen, the four something. I'm getting old. I have senior moments once in a while. I'm going blank by the author too, but I'm sure you know which book I mean. Also the books by I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't remember. There's the simple books. I just can't remember again. That are published by New World Library. Were books that were created again, were bestsellers and have hit the bestseller list. But they were books that were published. And in fact, most of the New Age books that are published and hit bestseller lists are still done by smaller publishers, not by bigger publishers. The Chicken Soup for the Soul books were all done by a small publisher out of Florida. The publisher there now has two big jet planes, all because he published those books. There are many books like that that hit the New York Times bestseller list because somebody, a smaller publisher takes a chance and creates a book that is worthwhile. There are also, one of the other ways that you can do it, and this is point number 7, is to pick a perennial topic, a book that everybody, it's going to be current for 10 years or more, and make it into something interesting. For example, What to Expect When You're Expecting has sold over 8 million copies, and every once in a while they'll appear on the New York Times bestseller list for a week or two, but most of the time they're under the radar. But they still sell like a million copies, 500,000 million copies a year, and have sold over 8 million copies. There's a woman who self-published the Microwave Cookbook. It was one of the first books about microwave cooking. It was a woman out of Oregon who sold over 1 million copies of that book. Every time she had to go back to press, she printed 50,000 copies. And she did very little promotion other than to get the books into the stores. There's another book published by a guy up in the mountains of California called The Small Time Operator. It's the only book he publishes, and he just keeps it up to date. It's a book basically on how to do budgets for small business, but it's very readable and very approachable. He sold 5,000 copies. And he just comes down off his mountain once or twice a year and does a little bit of promotion. But mainly he gets it into the bookstores and it sells because the word of mouth is so great on it. And this is something that, you know, again, it's a perennial topic. You always need to know how to do something like that. There's another book that was self-published called How to Satisfy a Woman Every Time. It hit the New York Times bestseller list for over 63 weeks, self-published. And again, but it's a perennial topic, and you'll see that that book still sells, even years after it was originally published. It hasn't been on the bestseller list for a while, but it still sells year after year because it's such a good book. Oh, I know what the one book was. Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, and then he just did a new book, which is also some on that topic, but I forget what it is. But he did very well with that book. And so, you know, if you get a perennial topic, if you get the right timing, you can make a book sell a lot. Well, one other thing on timing I forgot to mention. I know I'm jumping around here, but I apologize for that, but it's harder talking when I don't get feedback. 50 Simple Ways to Save the Earth was published before Earth Day, but it was published 6 months before Earth Day, whereas most publishers who were waiting for this was on the 20th anniversary of Earth Day. Most publishers were waiting for Earth Day or a few months, you know, a couple months before Earth Day to publish their ecology-related books. But 50 Simple Ways to Save the Earth came out over 6 months ahead of time, which is, in reality, when the media wanted to start talking about Earth Day. It was the only book available. Plus, it was such a easy book to sell because it was so short, simple, and it actually said, hey, there are 50 ways that everybody can do something to change their world. So it's a perfect book at the right time when the media wanted to tell about the story that it beat out every other book. It was on the bestseller list for months. It sold over a million copies through bookstores, so three million copies through premium sales because every company wanted to jump on the bandwagon and say, hey, we're also ecologically aware. And the reason I think it became a bestseller, even though there were other books that were better in terms of their detail and so on, was because it came out when the media wanted to talk about Earth Day. You don't bring out, for example, some people, if you want to write about, you know, 9/11 and the anniversary of that, you don't, you know, a lot of people on the first anniversary of that wanted to promote different books. Well, you don't promote it on 9/11. You promote it about 2 months ahead of time because in the media cycle, that's when they want to start talking about it. Just like they talked about the coming millennium, the 2000 change, they started writing about that 3 or 4 years ahead of time. So be aware that the media always want to talk about anniversaries way in advance of the actual anniversary and when you're starting to promote books, because it really does make a difference. Anytime you can be the first book in the marketplace with a new concept, it will make a difference. Another example of that is a book called The Prayer of Jabez, which was the first book that took a simple couple lines from the Bible and made a whole book out of it. And it became a word-of-mouth bestseller, sold, you know, millions of copies. And a lot of other publishers have come out with knockoffs of the book, but none of them have been on the bestseller list, or if on the bestseller list, weren't on the bestseller list for very long, because it was the first book on the subject. Point number 8 is to use the internet to create word of mouth. If you have not, I have a novel, one of the best ways to promote it is to put a chapter or two or even a chapter every week up on the net for people to read or to download. Give away the content is one of the best ways to get word of mouth going. Primary example of that, of course, is MJ Rose, who's now, you know, promotes herself as a, you know, an internet marketing expert. Well, she started by promoting her books, by giving them away as ebooks on a lot of, her books are sort of erotic novels. And so she started by promoting it on erotic websites, where people, you know, not the pay-for-it sites, but the free sites where people wanted to share their erotic tales and things like that. Well, she became so well-known there and so many downloads that she was able to sell her first three novels to the New York publisher for millions of dollars. Another example of this, in terms of giving content away to sell books, Lonely Planet actually put the entire text of all their travel guides on their websites and actually doubled sales in the next year. Doubled the sales of their books by giving all of their content away. But nobody wants to read a travel book on the internet. Nobody wants to read an entire book on the internet. If they get interested, eventually they want to buy the book. They want it to carry around with them. So it works very well. And on the internet, there are such great tools to use that you can distinguish yourself. You know, most of the New York publishers still haven't figured out how to use the internet or use it very effectively. But there are a lot of small publishers who understand that you can use viral marketing and you can use pay for placement in the search engines and you can position your website to be high in keywords, and you can share and network with other websites who are targeted to your key audiences, and you can create an email newsletter that allows you to continue to communicate with your readers on a regular basis so that you support your word-of-mouth army in a very effective way, so that whenever you create a new book, there's already a key market out there ready to buy your book and make it into a bestseller. I'll give you one more example of that. Robert Allen, who had, you know, had a number of New York Times bestsellers with books like Nothing Down, real estate books, and so on, was coming back into the market after about 10 years of not having published a book. And he had published a book called Multiple Streams of Income. And it was going to be published by John Wiley, you know, a New York publisher. But what he did to get it to be on the bestseller list is that he had an email list of 35,000 people who had, joined his email list over, a number of years as opportunity seekers. Well, this book, Multiple Streams of Income, was an opportunity seeker's book. What he did is he asked his 35,000 people that if they went to a bookstore, their local bookstore, he gave them a chance to go to any bookstore in the country and buy two copies of his book and send him a copy of their receipt, he would send them a $300 report by email. Now, the $100 report was probably what most of the people wanted more than the book, because it was probably some specific report that they perceived as being valuable. I forget what the report's name was, but it was probably something on real estate investment. Well, he had lots of people going out to buy two copies during a specific week. Now, the New York Times bestseller list is determined by how many books are sold in a particular week. And they have to be sold in specific stores that report to the New York Times bestseller list. Well, what he did is he got all his people to march to the stores during a particular 1 week. Well, that's going to create a lot of excitement in bookstores when so many people are doing it. It's going to show up on the New York Times bestseller list. It can't not happen. And so his book actually hit the New York Times bestseller list, the Wall Street Journal bestseller list, the Business Week business bestseller list, and stayed on the list for quite a few months because he started with a good launch, simply by using his email newsletter as a launching pad. Point number 9 is to work with bookstores to sell more books. And one of the key things that you can do here, especially with the chains, if you want to get into the chains and get good display space, you can actually pay them to put your book up front or on an end cap. This is taken care of by their merchandising department. If you're publishing your own book, you can go to Barnes & Noble, ask for their merchandising department, and ask for their different programs. The programs will cost anywhere from $1,000 to $20,000, depending on if you want to do a regional buy or an upfront buy and so on and so forth, what the positioning is going to be and for how long. An end cap display during a particular season, let's say during Valentine's or Mother's Day will be up there for 3 to 4 weeks in all stores and will probably cost you somewhere between $1,000 and $3,000 depending on the promotion. But it gets you into every Barnes & Noble in the country, and it gets you on a place where people will see you, and it probably gets you more than one copy in each one of those stores. Well, this gives you a chance at least to get people's attention. If you've got a good title and a good-looking book and a good topic, people will buy. So learn how to make use of those things. You can even, if you've got a New York publisher who's publishing your book, you can also negotiate that they do something like that as part of your contract. Or you can volunteer to do it yourself if they won't do it, because it can be very effective. Also, bookstore presentations can be very effective. Now, many of you have probably done a bookstore signing or something like that, and you go in and three people show up and you're going, what a waste of time. Well, there are things that you can do to help make that not a waste of time. One of the things you can do is actually work to publicize your appearance ahead of time. Ask the work with the bookstore to promote to their media list. If they don't have a media list, that's a good sign that they aren't going to do much promotion for your appearance, which means that either you cancel it or you start doing the promotion. Beyond that, when you do get to a bookstore and you do the signing, even if there's only 3 or 4 people, you ask them to if they would like you to autograph the rest of their books. In many cases, they will. And when they do that, they always put the book in a special display place. Generally speaking, when they sign you up to do a signing, they will also put your book in a special display space for up to 3 or 4 weeks beforehand and 3 or 4 weeks afterwards. The fact that they've gotten to meet you will encourage them to start to hand sell your book. So there are reasons to go to a bookstore for book signing other than just the signing. And in every case, try to do more than a signing anyway. Try to do a talk, a demonstration, something like that, so that you have a better chance to draw more people in who are just walking around the bookstore. If you can get excitement going, people will start to drop by, and then you can get more people buying the book, and you can, again, autograph the book. Very few people will have a successful autographing session just as an autograph session unless you're really well known, like Bill Clinton or a famous author. And if you find some bookstores that really go that extra step, make them your special bookstores. When John Grisham first started off in publishing, there were 5 bookstores in the South that were the first bookstores to give him a chance. And now for every book that's published, he always goes to those 5 bookstores first. They're the ones that get the first attention from him. There's one of those in Blytheville, Arkansas, Lemuria Bookstore in Jackson, Mississippi, the Oxford Bookstore in Oxford, Mississippi. I'm forgetting what the other 2 bookstores are. But these are bookstores that he goes to first every time a new book comes out, and he does an appearance there. Think of what that does for his, you know, when he goes to those bookstores, they say, we're at John Grisham's bookstore, and, you know, they have a whole display center for all of his books, even when he's not there, because he has given that kind of loyalty to them. They, in turn, have given him loyalty and extra display space. You can do the same thing with any bookstore that treats you well, even in terms of coming back and doing another assigning at the same bookstore for your book. In many cases, if it worked once, it'll work again in that same bookstore. One final thing, and this is to just keep knocking on the doors. Don't give up. One of the key things that I've been telling people in the past 4 or 5 years is to create a list of 100 key people that need to know about your book. These are the key media editors, producers, key radio shows, key TV shows, key magazines, key newspapers that could make a difference in your book. Also, the key people that keep book clubs, catalogs, and chain stores. lots of key distributors, especially any special interest distributors that might be interested in your book. I call this list the Kramer 100. I gave it a memorable name. I named it after me. I call it the Kramer 100 now. And my experience in about 5 years of telling people to do this is that only about 3 or 4 have actually done it, which is the most stupid thing that they could possibly do, because this advice is based on my experience of knowing the people who have been successful in the past. And the people who are successful set priorities, and they focus on the major media. They focus on the major sales outlets for their books. So they may do a mailing to 10,000 radio shows at some point, but they focus on the key 100 radio shows or the key top 10 TV shows that will really make a difference, and they keep knocking on those doors. And with the Kramer 100 list, if you create one, what you do with that list is you get to know who's the right decision maker. So if your book belongs in Cosmopolitan, you find out which editor is the right contact, and then you contact them once a month with a new story idea or an interview request or an excerpt possibility or book reveal possibility. And you do this with every media that's important. If you think that you really need to be on Oprah and that it's right, you keep giving her show ideas, a new show idea every month. Because the reality is that every media works the same way. Whatever's in front of them is what's going to get their attention. And while they do have Rolodexes and they do keep things that might interest them in the future, the reality is that what's on the top of their mind, the top of their awareness, and that means what they've seen recently, is what's going to be most likely to be chosen. And that means that you have to keep yourself in front of them on a regular basis so that they have a chance to remember you and actually choose you over somebody else when they're ready to do something on your subject. And the best way to do that is to build relationships. The reality is that all of marketing is built on relationships. It really is. Any marketing you do is actually building relationships, whether it's making sales, whether it's trying to get media attention, and so on and so forth. The only reason to hire a book publicist versus doing publicity yourself is to hire their relationships. What you are buying when you pay a publicist is their relationships that they already have. And almost any media will trust the publicist who they've worked with in the past before they'll trust somebody new coming to them. And that's why you would pay a publicist, and only for that reason. So when you go to a publicist, you ask them, do you have the relationships that I want to reach? Who have you made any placements with these media in the past 3 months? And then track down the people that they say they placed and find out how well this thing went. Did it help, et cetera, et cetera? Was it a good placement or not a good placement? Because you can be on Oprah and not have a good placement because you're just one person, you get to talk for 3 seconds, and there's no emphasis on your book. You're not going to sell very many books. But if Oprah is sitting there chatting with you and holding up your book once in a while and saying, I love this book, her army is going to march out and buy the book. I know people who have appeared on Oprah and not seen any sales as a result. And I know people who have been on Oprah and sold 250,000 books in the next 2 weeks. So it all depends on what the placement, even on a show like Oprah's, whether or not it's going to sell. So develop your Kramer 100 list and really work it. When you develop the Kramer 100 list, be sure that you know everything you know about that media. That means if something like Vogue magazine is right for you, you read the last 3 or 4 issues of Vogue magazine and you find out how they write about books and who writes about books, who does the interviews versus who does the reviews, who does excerpts from the books versus those who do reviews or do interviews, who's doing articles where they rely upon experts that they interview, and contact them if that's the position you want. The same with TV. What is Montel doing now? Tape his show for 2 weeks and see how he uses authors or experts in his show. And how do you want to be used in his show to be most effective? You need to know what the Kramer 100 list is, the list that you're going to get to know really, really thoroughly, exactly what they look for, etc. If you think you're going to sell to a catalog, get the catalog, buy some things from the catalog, look at the catalog, and when you pitch the catalog, name the page on their current catalog where your book would fit. Now, when you approach a catalog and say, my book would fit on page 45 between this product and that product, well, now they know that you know the catalog and you really understand how your book fits. You're going to have a much more chance to have them give a serious look at your book than somebody who just says, here's a book, I think it'll interest your audience. Because you've shown to them that you know their catalog and where your book fits within that catalog. The second part of it is, will your book help them sell other products in their catalog? And you can also make that, because you can say, my book will help you sell more of this particular hammer or this blender or this aroma essence or whatever it might be that your book is about, and will help them to sell. This is something that you do. You build relationships, and ultimately in creating relationships, all you really are doing is making a friend. And with the Kramer 100 list, what you ultimately want to do is make each of these people your friend. So that, like with me, I knew the New York Times reporter who covered the publishing industry. And every couple months, she would email me and say, what should I be covering now? What's the latest news? What's of interest? And I would give her stories. She never did a story about me, but I did get other New York Times reporters calling me, and I'm sure based upon her recommendation, for stories they were doing about books. And that's part of what you want to do in creating a relationship, is to become not just, hey, what can you do for me, but here's something I can do for you. So every once in a while on your Kramer 100 list, you might actually mail them and say, you know, I noticed you had a story on here, and a friend of mine has just written a book on this subject, and I think you should talk to them. I think you'd have a great follow-up story with them. It could be another speaker. Maybe different speakers would work with each other to do that once in a while and send to their Kramer 100 list their recommendations of things that they notice when they see a story that would apply to one of their speaker friends. Excuse me. Do something every day for any book that you love. I think every book deserves a 3-year book marketing plan. That if you love the book and you spent the time to write it, you should spend at least 3 years marketing it. It doesn't mean you have to do something every day for that book. It doesn't mean that you have to be marketing continuously for that book, but you should continue to keep it in mind and continue to pitch it where it's appropriate. And for every book you love, as long as you love it, you should do something every day for that book. At least 10 minutes a day. With 10 minutes or 15 minutes a day, you can make 3 contacts. You can make a phone call, you can write a letter, you can send an email for that book. And if you do 3 things every day, that's 1,000 contacts a year aimed at your Kramer 100 list. I guarantee you, you're going to get publicity with key media, with the major media, and not some small-time, you know, newspaper in Eau Claire, Wisconsin that may not sell any books for you. You can get into the New York Times. You can get into Vogue. You can get into Business Week. It's your focus. It's your choice whether or not you get in, because every media is hungry for good content. And the only reason somebody with content not as good as yours gets in is because they kept knocking when you stopped. So I think my time is up. We should open it for questions.
Right on target, John. Thank you.
And anyway, I want to get some feedback. It's interesting to talk to dead air.
That is interesting. You did a fabulous job. You just did fantastic. I know everybody out there was quickly taking notes. I've got pages of notes here. And so to everyone out there, we're getting ready to open the lines for Q&A, and I know a lot of you have questions that you've been wanting to ask John. Before I unmute everyone, I want to thank John again for his fantastic session with, gosh, just John's valuable tips on how to get a bestseller. And also, John has a email that he will send to anyone that emails him on 21 ways to break into the media. John,
27 ways.
Huh?
27 ways.
Oh, 27. I'm sorry. 27 ways.
And when you email me, if you'd also like to get my free email tip of the week, it's a book marketing tip every week. It actually includes 3 or 4 different tips. I'd be happy to add you to that, but I only add people if they ask for that.
Okay. Jeff, if you right now would give everyone your email and your website.
My email is John Kramer, K-R-E-M-E-R, at bookmarket.com.
Okay. And is your website and email?
Oh, my website is bookmarket.com.
Okay. Also, I want to mention the program that everyone just heard can be downloaded. There will be a link in the next Writers and Publishers Peg e-zine. The teleseminars are recorded and available free of charge. So make sure when you get your monthly e-zine, to go to the link for this seminar and download it. You'll have the entire call we had today, plus the Q&A session for your files. Also, one final announcement. Next month's teleseminar will be on the prearranged third Thursday of the month, September 16th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Our presenter is going to be Gene Parrott, so you're going to want to attend. Gene Parrott is a 3-time Emmy winner for all of his work in television. He served on Bob Hope's writing staff for 28 years, and the last 12 of those is Bob Hope's head writer. Gene also produced several of television's top-rated shows, including Three's Company and Welcome Back, Kotter. Gene's book on comedy writing step-by-step, is considered a Bible for humor writers and stand-up comics. It's been a consistent bestseller in his field for over 20 years. Gene has published over 25 books, with a book on writing humorous magazine articles out in 2005. Presently, Gene writes a monthly humor column in Witstop for the Arizona Highways magazine. He's also sold humor articles to Reader's Digest, Good Housekeeping, Parenting, and McCall. He's going to discuss several anecdotes for writer's slump that all writers have from time to time. Not so much writer's block, which is a different animal, but it's that time when you're writing well but not selling or getting the financial reward that your writing deserves. He's going to have 3 areas to investigate when your career stalls, slow downs, or even continues progressing but doesn't progress as fast as you want. Gene will recommend how you look to yourself and list many ideas, which will be a prescription for what ails your writing performance, how you look to your writing, look to your marketing, and they'll have 30-minute mini prescriptions for healing a lagging career and getting your writing career into high gear. So everyone is going to want to be sure to attend that next month. Let me take one moment and unmute everybody. I'm going to ask for your questions alphabetically. So the first group will be O through Z. So let me take a moment and unmute. Okay.
Hello.
Sir?
Hello.
Hello. Okay. Any questions we have, O through Z, if your last name starts with O, and ask the question.
Okay. I'm at O through Z. This is Teresa from Boulder, Colorado. And great presentation and wonderful information. And I'm wondering if an author or a self-publisher has a limited budget to spend on promotion, you know, how to prioritize, especially for a business book, focusing on print media versus broadcast media, radio and TV?
I would spend probably 90% of my money on the broadcast. I mean, on the print.
Uh-huh.
And I would focus again on the key business media, depending on the kind of book you have, which media I would choose. For example, there are 50, you know, there are something like 600 business trade magazines that cover different subjects. For example, you know, like lawn and garden marketing, gift and toy, gift and decorative accessories, and so on. That cover different market segments. Now, if your book was a book that could apply to different retail stores, these are trade magazines that are aimed primarily at retailers, that could be a very useful way to market your book to those. But if your book was a general management book for executives, then I would aim it at Forbes and Fortune and Business Week, Wall Street Journal, and some of the key business media.
Well, how does this fit into what you were talking about with the point number 10 by city? Where,
excuse me one moment. Let me just jump in right here.
Yeah.
The rest of you, if you're not asking a question, if you could just right now press star 6 because we're getting some music in the background. And that will mute everybody in the background.
Whoa. Now we're getting lots of beeps.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
Yeah, that gets music. And last, a few months ago, we had a parrot background, so they'll cut all that out. Thank you. Okay. Let's go back with your question.
Yeah, so for, you had said point number 2 was to focus on hiring a publicist where you could really do a campaign.
Go city by city?
You know, and focusing on the radio, and you did say, you know, the print and speaking engagements and such.
Yes. Now, that, again, you haven't told me what your book is about.
So it's about the pursuit of passion and purpose.
Okay, so that could apply to not just executives, but to anybody at any level.
Right.
Okay, so then, in terms of the city by city strategy, you could hire a publicist, or you could do it yourself. You know, because you can easily target the media outlets in almost any city simply by calling up the visitors bureau or chamber of commerce in that city and ask if they have a media list. Most of them will. That they will be happy to share with you if you're coming to town for some event.
Okay.
And that can be a way to get a media list. If they won't do it, then talk to a local bookstore that you're going to do something with and get their media list.
Any but, other questions on O3Z?
Yes, hi. My last name is Silver. quick question. You had mentioned, John, when you were working, you were talking about working with booksellers, and you mentioned
yes.
something called the, was it the end cap display? I couldn't
yes.
quite understand what that was. How do you spell it, and what does it actually stand for?
End cap, E-N-D-C-A-P. That means at the end of an aisle in a bookstore, there's usually a display out facing uh-huh. the main aisle. And it's like 3 feet wide or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Those are used for special displays. You'll see it if you go in Barnes & Noble or even B. Dalton or something like that,
uh-huh.
that there'll be an end cap display for back to school or summer reads, Valentine's, uh-huh. things like that. It may
you
be
can actually offer, if you're coming there or you know your book or they're having an appearance there, you can actually buy that display for a period of time.
I don't know if you could do it bookstore by bookstore in terms of the chains. You can buy a number of chains, you know, the display on an end cap throughout the chain or through selected stores for a month at a time. Just,
uh-huh.
you know, what you want to do is just talk to the merchandising department and ask them what are the possibilities.
Uh-huh.
And they'll give you all different kinds of programs. Now, they are selective. In other words, you can't, you know, it's not just a question of whether or not you can pay them money.
Right.
Because they're not going to sell space to somebody whose book they don't think they can sell.
Gotcha.
So they're going to, you know, there is a criteria there. But if your book is something that's related to an end cap that they're coming up with, like, say, Mother's Day or something like that, and yours is about Mother's Day, then it would make sense. Or any time we want. In fact, you can even sell them sometimes on an idea for an end cap that they haven't been thinking about. Let's say you've got two or three other speakers who have written a similar kind of book or something that's related that would be maybe for Take Our Daughters to Work Day,
mm-hmm.
which is now Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day. If that's the case, maybe you want to work together to convince them to do a display for that day. If they don't already, my guess is they do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions?
Oh, I have a question.
Okay.
Is that Sylvia from the Washington Post who just called you?
Is that Connie Gordon? I can hear you on the other. Yes.
This is an international situation where everybody's interested in how to sell books. Yes, I don't have a question. I'm just delighted to be part of it. I've learned a great deal, and I'm going to make my 100 list, and I'm going to contact everybody I know that's important.
Okay. Great.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
My name is Linda Willis. I'm from Los Angeles. And I would like to know if there is a way to identify the bookstores that report to the bestsellers list.
No, they keep that list secret. But you can guess that it's going to be some of the major bookstores in the country. For example, on my website, I have the top 25 bookstores in the country. They probably all report to them.
Okay.
But
and
also Barnes & Noble does.
Okay.
So if you wanted to use this strategy of sending people to, you know, get on the list, if you just, you know, say send people to Barnes & Noble, you will have covered, you know, a major category of people reporting to the New York Times list.
Are they separated by geographical area?
The bestseller list?
The stores.
Yeah.
I mean, Barnes & Noble's, it would have to be Barnes & Noble all over the country or in a certain geographic area?
If you want to get on the New York Times bestseller list, it has to be all over the country. It's the only way that you'll get enough sales to make it worthwhile. Because if you get a lot of sales in one store and not very many sales in a lot of other stores, New York Times does a weighting. They weight the thing. And that means that they take into consideration those kinds of odd situations and discount it some. So that even though you may have sold 1,000 books in one store, that will only count for maybe 10 sales in over the country because of the way that they take into consideration some odd flip.
Anyone else on O to Z with a question?
Yes, this is Rosemarie Rossetti in Columbus.
Just one other thing.
Okay.
On my website, I sell a list of the top 700 bookstores, independent bookstores in the country. If there's any stores that report to the New York Times bestseller list, they're on that list, other than the Barnes & Noble and Borders chains.
Okay. Rosemarie, your question?
Yes, I'm about to do a test mailing to a group of libraries here in Ohio, and I was wondering what should be in the envelope, what should be included in the flyer. Is this even a good avenue to explore, or is there another way to approach library sales?
For library sales, do you have any reviews at all yet?
Yes, I do.
Okay, include those on the sales sheet. That's the most important thing you can include. If you have any testimonials from librarians, include those. If you don't have any testimonials from librarians, get some in your local area. Most local librarians would be happy to give your book a testimonial. Okay? Those are the key things that make librarians' decisions. The second thing you have to have is your book has to be available through some of the library jobbers, like Baker and Taylor.
Okay.
Because the library will not order direct from you, except for maybe if you're only going to Ohio and you're in Ohio, they probably will. But otherwise, if you're trying to do a national thing or something like that, you'd be better off sending them to Baker & Taylor or BroDart or Midwest Library Service, something like that, if they have your books in stock.
Okay, let's give it...
Now, one other thing, just on the library mailing, you'll have better success, I believe, by doing a large-size postcard with your book cover on one side, and on the other side, the sales message, short, sweet, with why library patrons would be interested, plus the reviews, a couple of testimonials, and where to get the book. That's all they need.
Thank you.
Okay, great answer. Now let's give everybody that has their last name starting with A through G.
Dennis Mahoney from Boston. John, I just had one question.
Yes.
You had mentioned a statistic, 80% of all books were bought by women?
No, by word of mouth.
But you mentioned something about...
At least 50 to 60% of all books are bought by women ages 35 to 50.
Great, thank you very much.
And actually probably about 80% of all books in retail stores are bought by women.
Great, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? If your last name starts with A through G.
Yeah, David Fisher here.
You know, the reason that women buy, that's one reason that when you do a self-help book, especially if it's on relationships, you really aim it at women, for the most part, because that's who buys the books.
Okay, last name, A through G.
David Fisher here. Hi, Pam. And John, thanks very much for this.
Sure.
Any advice in terms of how one finds a good publicist? Hey, Pam.
Talk to Pam.
I mean, how do you really, you know, start out? What are the questions you should use, the criteria for?
Well, first of all, on my website, I list about 200 publicists that do books.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them do special interests. They focus on business or cooking or something like that. And if your book's on that subject, you can actually search on that page on my website and find things. Okay, there's a whole bunch of resource pages on my website that if you go to bookmarket.com, on the right-hand corner, there's a bank vault graphic. Click on that, and it'll take you to the resource page, which lists all the different resources I have available on my website. There's lots of different things there.
Great.
So to pick a publicist, the key thing is to know who have they done work with before so that you can talk to some of those people and find out how well they did. You know, for every success story with the publicist, I've heard another story where somebody had spent $30,000 with the publicist and had no luck. Now, that shouldn't happen with a good publicist, but sometimes it does because, you know, the publicist cannot guarantee, you know, any placements. No matter how good they are, they can't guarantee it. But what I would want from a publicist is a bi-weekly report on what they're doing and what the results have been so far, and have that emailed to me on a regular basis, because without that, you have no good, you know, because if you're finding that over the first 6 weeks, nothing much is happening, well, that's often the case, because it takes a while to make something happen. But you might want to, at that point, say, hey, maybe the news release we sent out isn't working. Let's try another one. Or, hey, how about doing a different pitch letter or cover letter to pitch the show idea or something like that so we can get a better response? Let's try something different instead of waiting until the end of 3 months and you've already spent $15,000 and nothing's happened. And then you say, let's try something else. Well, that now you're going into let's try something else and spend another $15,000. Because a good publicist is going to cost you somewhere between probably $3,000 and $5,000 a month, plus expenses, depending on how they operate. Now, Pam may be more generous, but I don't know what her rates are.
Okay, next, we'll take one more question on.
John, this is Danielle,
yes.
Cleveland, and asking about a book that is geared for the restaurant servers,
okay.
for young servers who want to make bigger tips.
Okay.
But it also creates more revenue for the restaurant owners.
Right.
So we're looking to see if we should be promoting this through the restaurant owners as a way for their servers to deliver better service.
Right.
Or to go right to the restaurant servers
via
the internet.
I would do both. I would do both. I would be selling the restaurants on the idea of buying multiple copies to give to every one of their waitresses, waiters, and even possibly busboys and so on.
Okay.
You know, and try to sell it as a premium. Now, you know, to do that restaurant by restaurant is really tough. Now, you could possibly do it to a chain. So I would probably start with some of the chains, for example, maybe Applebee's or something like that, mm-hmm. where the entire chain buys into the program and gives it to every new employee.
And then the premium looks like what, John?
Well, then they buy the book or some portion of the book to give to every one of their workers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may even want it branded as their Applebee's Guide to Better Service or something like that.
Okay.
Or getting bigger tips.
Yes.
And it could be the entire book or some portion of it, depending on what their budget is. So if they say, well, we could do that, but we can only spend 50 cents for each worker, you say, well, okay, then we'll do chapters 6 and 7. And
okay.
We'll call it the Applebee's Guide to Better Service, something like that.
All right.
And then you can do a customized one because Applebee's will be buying 10,000 copies or, you know, 5,000 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing you can do with a local, if you're trying to do local restaurants,
yes.
is to work with your local bookseller to do it. A lot of local bookstores now are trying to get out into the community more to sell books because they know that that's one way they can be competitive with the chains.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really trying to work more with community relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So contact the community relations coordinator at any independent bookstore or community outreach coordinator, and they will be happy to work with you in trying to pitch a premium program to all the restaurants in the area, where they will take some of the risk, and then you offer it to them at a discount, a nice discount. So the bookstores can buy your book and say 50% off. Yeah, if they join your program, you provide them with the right letter and maybe phone call script to go with it to contact all of the stores in the area. Now, to develop that letter, you start by working with a bookstore in your own local area until you get a letter that really works. And then you go out and do that with, then you send it to other bookstores and say, we've got a program, we've got a letter that works. It will, we guarantee you that you'll sell 300 to 500 copies of our book in your local area because so-and-so has already done that and here's their testimonial.
Okay.
And you can do this to reach any local area like accounting offices, doctor's offices, business consultants, therapists, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't have to be with just restaurants or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody with any book can probably work with a local bookseller to reach a local group of professionals or retailers that you can't reach on your own, but who might be very good, you know, might buy multiple copies of your book.
Mm-hmm.
Work with a good independent bookstore to set up a program like that and then export it to other bookstores. They will love you for it.
John, thank you so much.
I love your answers. You got such great creative answers. Let's right now go to anyone whose last name starts H through N.
Hey, John. This is Jim in Boca Raton.
Okay.
I don't know if this fits in the classification of urban myth, but you made a reference to it, and I've heard the story several times about some major authors who have sold their books literally out of the back of a van. Is this literally, or is this kind of, you know, you're saying that they went on a book tour and they were promoting it themselves?
Yes. I've heard the story secondhand about Redfield, but from what I consider a reliable source. I have not had anybody tell me it's wrong, but I've not met Jim, so I don't know for sure. That's the only example I've given you of somebody who's actually sold out of their van.
I've heard it a couple of times before, some of it referring to Chicken Soup for the Soul and Canfield, et cetera.
No, they've never,
just
never sold out.
Police
they,
chasing them off the street.
I don't know of the Chicken Soup for the Soul selling it out of their vans, but they have done a lot of creative selling through... for example, hair stylists and things like that, barbershops. And they get it into a lot of different areas that normally wouldn't happen. But I don't think they've done a lot of selling out of their van.
Okay.
Jack has never told me that, or Mark, so as far as I know, that's not true.
Wayne Dyer is also
Wayne
known
Dyer,
for
yeah.
having done that with Erroneous Zones.
Yes,
he actually is on tape for saying it. Yeah.
Yes, and there are other people. I mean, John Grisham, when he first did it, was going store to store to try to sell his book, and that's where he got these five stores that were really his, you know, key friends of his. And
Greg
I know
Godek.
That story is true.
Greg Godek did it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
went around the country in a motor home. For
yes, and
years.
That wasn't too effective for him. I know that because he stopped doing it because it just wasn't working. So that, you know, it can work or it cannot work. I don't recommend it for most people. I think it's not the best use of your time. I do think the speaking is, but allowing other people to help set up the event, like the Unity churches often do a very good job of promoting their events, and you can sell a lot through them. I was at the main church in Kansas City the day after Barbara DeAngelis had been there, and 500 people had been to her event, and she sold 300 copies of a $300 tape set through back of the room sales. That's $90,000 worth of inventory in one day.
Okay, any other questions?
Is Elizabeth in Massachusetts?
Huh?
Yes.
My books are in editions. They've been in print for 30 years.
Yes.
And I wonder if you have any advice about how to get... I know that reviewers just simply are not excited about a third, fourth, or a fifth edition. Do you think it's better to rename it and get a whole different ISBN number, et cetera? Well, that often happens with the new editions anyway. And my other question is, how much do you think the reviews on Amazon.com have an influence on the book?
The reviews have some influence on Amazon sales, but probably nothing else.
Okay.
It's nice to get the reviews because you can also then put them up on your website, things like that. And they do help Amazon sales. You do have to get a new ISBN for every new edition.
Right.
I've gone through 5 editions of 1001 Ways to Market Your Books, and a 6th edition will be coming out. It is a brand name. It's not what people ask for. I would not give it a new name. But I would come out with a new book at some point, but probably keep that edition alive if it's a brand name, if people remember it.
Right.
You know, The Power of Positive Thinking still sells thousands of copies every year, I think around 100,000 copies a year, and it's been out for 60 years now. So your book could still do that without it necessarily, you know, you could have new edition if it's important to have it up to date. But if you want to get new sales, I would create a new book, and it may be a book that's based on or even excerpted from the book you have now. You know, in today's world, people like shorter books.
Right.
So you could easily take your book, which may be, what, 300 pages long, and create a 120-page book out of it with just a little bit new addition of information and give it a new title. And I guarantee you that it will sell because the price will be a lot lower, and you can probably do it in a hardcover edition for even around $12 or $15, and people will buy it. So don't think you have to recreate the wheel or something like that, because a short book aimed at a target audience or even just with a different sort of angle from the main book can be excerpted.
But on the same token, what do you think about, I know you mentioned giving away chapters, but also selling portions of books, downloading them on the internet, e-books, I guess, is what I'm asking about.
I think it's a great thing to do. For example, the free report I'm offering you, The 27 Ways to Break into Media, is actually an excerpt from Chapter 9 of the book. And if you've already got that, you know, if you already have my book and you want a free report, I'll send you another one on publicity if you already have the book. So just tell me you already have the book. You have your choice between that one and a report on how to hire a good publicist and work with them. That'll be your choices.
Thank you.
Okay. John, this is Roy in Atlanta.
Yes.
John, my new book is going to sell for $16.95, and I've had a couple of speaking clients ask for quantity discount prices. Are there recommended quantity discount schedules?
Are you publishing the book yourself?
Yes.
I would start at probably something like 20 or 40% for a certain, you know, for one case or something like that. But if they're going to want a large quantity, then I'd probably move it up to 50% as soon as possible, non-returnable.
50% non-returnable, around 1,000 copies?
I don't know. I sell my book, one case for 50% off. I do that to anybody who wants to buy a case of my books.
Okay. Thank you.
And I like doing it at that percentage, and it's non-returnable, and I sell a ton of books that way. So I like being generous to people. It's just part of my nature, and I'm still making good money on the book.
Good policy.
So that's probably the way I would go. I'd probably get to 50% as quickly as possible. But if if they're only going to nickel and dime you and buy 10 books or something like that, and you feel that, okay, I don't want to do that, then offer them 20 or 40% discount until you feel comfortable giving them 50%. A case of my books is only 12, which is really, generous. Because it's a big, thick book.
Yeah.
It's 700 pages. But your case might be, most books have probably anywhere from 30 to 50 books in a case.
140 pages.
Yeah, so yours is going to probably have somewhere around 50 books in a case of books. I don't know. Yeah. Depends on the size of the case.
We have time for one more question.
John, this is Carolyn Masters.
Yes.
I'm thinking about attending the American Booksellers Association conference next summer. I understand
yes.
It's absolutely huge. Do you have any suggestions on how to get my arms around that conference and just a couple tips to get familiar with the group?
Okay, it's going to be in New York next year.
Oh, really?
What's your intention?
I thought it was in Chicago.
No, it was in Chicago this year.
Okay. Well, my intention is to really learn about book publishing in general.
Okay, so you want to learn about it. So you're not interested in selling a book at this point?
Yes, I am also interested in that.
Well, no.
But
you've got to be clear here.
Okay. Well, this is what I'm in the process of trying to get clear.
Yeah, see, my advice for you will depend on what exactly you want to get out of it.
I'm not intending to sell a book to a big publisher, if that's what you're asking.
Now, you could,
if
you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, you would actually make sure that the first day you were there, you get to them right away, to the key ones that you want to approach, and say, can I talk to an editor? Can I schedule an interview? You might even call them ahead of time and say, which editors are going to be there?
Okay.
Can I set up an appointment?
Okay.
Now, if you want to just learn about the industry, walk the floor.
Okay.
And talk to people. But don't talk to them if they're busy.
Okay.
But the minute they're not busy, talk to somebody who's ever there looking lonely.
Okay.
Talk to them.
Okay.
You know, and walk the floor and see what kind of books are out there and so on and so forth. And get a feel for which publishers you like what they're doing. You like their book covers, you like what they're doing, and you want to copy them or you maybe want to sell to them.
Okay.
You can do the same thing in going to a good bookstore and seeing which publishers you might want to target by doing the same thing, going into the bookstore and finding out which ones have the best covers, which ones have face-out display versus spine display, which ones are, you know, buying end cap space and so on and so forth, because those are the publishers you want to be involved with.
Okay.
Especially if they have books that are related to you.
Right.
Now, if you want to sell foreign rights, then you go to the foreign section. And you set up that. You know, you set up interviews there. You go to the Spanish language section and say, who here? And you just go to the first booth there and you say, who here would be interested in a business book? You know, or in a New Age book? And they'll tell you, so-and-so down there does. You go over there and you say, I'd like to make an appointment to speak with you.
Uh-huh.
Most of the foreign publishers are accustomed to working on appointment basis.
We need to be wrapping up now.
Thank you.
Why?
we're out of time, but I know many of you, if you have any questions, I guess they could email you, John?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, and if you would give everyone your website and email again.
My website is bookmarket.com, and my email is johncramer, K-R-E-M-E-R, at bookmarket.com.
Yeah. John, this was really an informative session. I know everybody out here got many valuable notes, and you were just fantastic. And I know you set a new standard for all of our upcoming seminars with your seminar today. Just before we wrap up, I just want to mention that our next month's teleseminar is going to be Jean Parrott.
Yep.
Excuse me? It'll be Jean Parrott speaking on about most writers and speaking on making money with your writing and writer's slump.
Can I say one more thing?
No, yes, John.
I'm doing one of my 3-day book marketing blast-off seminars in early October in Toronto, if anybody wants to come. It's information's on my website. But what I cover there is what I cover today plus a lot more, but in greater depth.
Okay, fantastic. And also, I want to tell everyone that, you know, I really recommend that everybody on the line today get John's book. I've had it for years, and it's a really a valuable book, and tell all your friends. And we look forward to seeing everybody next month to hear Jean Parrott. Thank you, John.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
Okay, and...
thanks a lot, everyone.
Yeah,
thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.